Connor, have you been satisfied by Kill Team this edition?
You know, I've been all rightly satisfied. Like, I saw like C plus B minus. Like, it's not amazing, but it's all right. It does the job. But if there was something out there that could leave me even more satisfied, Chuck, I'd definitely be interested in that.
Well, we're going to find out if a couple people from California can satisfy you on the Vox Cascadia podcast. So welcome back, everyone. Wait, what?
As long as they bring me in and out, if they're coming from California, yeah, they got it.
In-N-Out's.
I know that it's not the greatest burger of all time, but I have a special place for it in my heart.
Why?
Childhood nostalgia, and I think it's relatively all right.
Well, they give you a lot of Christian stuff and
people still go to Chick-fil-A, all right? I don't go there, but I'll support. Yeah. I will support In-N-Out in this single cause and just ignore the moral implications of that, all right?
I love giving my girlfriend shit every time she wants to eat Chick-fil-A. Mm. It's like one of my favorite things. She's like, I'm weak to it. And I'm like, oh, you must hate gay people. And she's
exactly.
Like, no.
Yeah, why does your girlfriend hate gay people?
I don't know. I've asked her that many times every time she wants Chick-fil-A, so.
Welcome back, everyone. We got the OG crew here, and
yeah, it's been a while.
We're going to talk Squad Ops. So, yes. Dakota from Squad Games and Giacomo and Saya and a bunch of other people have chipped in to try and figure out if we can make Kill Team more fun. So, they've designed some new rules, some new Tac Ops, some new Crit Ops. Some new equipment from other content creators. I don't see the Vox Cascadia one on there, but we've made our own up, and we're going to call it canon either way. So,
you know, we did equipment first. We had the zip line, you know. So,
tell us about the zip line, Tyler.
All right, you could place the zip line down, and then you could place a marker from one vantage point to another, essentially, and it allowed you to traverse on long team extra well. So,
yeah, that was a cattail through the camera there.
Yes it is. Chuck has decided to join us also, so there she
been
is.
Here the whole time, dude.
Other Chuck the
original Chuck.
so we're gonna go through the squad ops, and we're gonna see if they improve the game. Connor, I feel like you of the three of us have had the most beef with this edition, so in 60 seconds tell us what your beef with this edition is.
No scoring turn one, boring and lame. Three objectives, boring and lame, because it kind of just reverts to there's only one objective you fight over unless you're a very fast or teleporting team. I think secondaries being locked to one only is really lame as well, because especially with the fact that there's this kind of a best in each archetype, a lot of the teams end up playing the same way instead of having separate ones. And then there's not been enough AdMech team releases, which is the most boring and lame of all. There should be six.
You got Battleclade.
I said more. I want more. Mm-hmm. And ideally cool.
Tyler, what about you? Me personally, like, I don't have a lot of beef with this edition. I think it's I like the cagey gameplay in turns one and sometimes in turn two. And hey, Sarah. And what do you think of this edition so far?
You know, I echo some of Connor's feelings. I feel like turning point one is kind of a glorified scouting step. It feels uninteractive, and I would like that to change. I also think that the three objectives kind of limits what's going to happen in the game. I think that more, like five, could be good. So I think Squad Ops is a good opportunity for people to realize that there's other ways to play the game, you know? So, but we'll go over that.
Well, yeah, we're going to go through it. So, again, this was created by Squad Games. Dakota and Giacomo and Saya, who run like the LVO tournament, they run the All Valley Team tournament and a bunch of stuff in California. Dakota's come up to Tacoma to TO up there too. And nice. They were looking for a way to kind of expand the game and make it more fun, kind of deal with the gripes that people have. So we're going to go through it. It's going to be a lot of reading. If you're watching the video version of this, I'm going to get the cards put up as we're going through them. So I got a lot of homework.
You got a lot of writing down to do.
A lot of writing down. I'm going to start a little notepad here. We'll try and explain them the best we can, you know, as we are. So,
people don't come to us for reading.
No. Although I haven't had the time to do it. I'm going to get Morning Glory milking farm. So we can do a reenactment in the audio of the in the after show of the Patreon coming soon. So
is that one of the punishments? Is that what got voted?
No, that's just for the fuck of it. Yeah, that's just
for the okay. We're doing that for fun. Okay, sounds good.
No, the punishment that won is actually we have to paint against our style. So, a couple tournaments coming up, and our Patreons voted that if Tyler does better than me across two tournaments, across nine rounds over the next two weekends, I have to paint in oil. And if I do better than Tyler, Tyler has to paint like box art. So, painting against our style, 'cause I'm the basic box art bitch. And, Tyler is the oiliest dude, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I gotta use extra soap when I shower.
Nice.
Pretty much. Yeah. Message out there, all you nerds, use extra soap. So please.
Come absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
shower before you go to a tournament too.
And every day of the tournament.
Every day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So squad ops. So yeah. Squad ops is a PvP mission pack for head-to-head kill team gameplay. Its goals are to provide a balanced and fun way to play the game while ensuring a meaningful gameplay begins in the first turning point. You got a little space after the turning point there, Dakota. You got to get a little editing there. So early decisions matter. In each game, each player must score VP from four different ops. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this is going to be the same as we have right now with just a little bit of flair to it. So the crit op, score VP by performing mission actions and controlling objective markers. Kill op 2.0, score VP as enemy operatives are incapacitated. TAC op, score VP from a TAC op they secretly select from one of their team's archetypes. Each TAC op specifies when it should be revealed. Squad ops uses the current approved ops 2025 for TAC ops. TAC ops do not interact whatsoever with non-critical objective markers. So this is going to be a big thing that they've added to it. If a TAC op refers to an objective marker, it is referring to a critical objective marker. Players can't score TAC op using non-critical object markers. And then they also added back painting. So the painting op, score 2 VP if all models are battle ready, or 1 VP if they meet the 3-color minimum. Otherwise, score 0 VP. This is scored at the start of the battle. So objectives. So squad ops uses 5 objective markers. 3 nice. Are critical objectives, and 2 are non-critical objective markers, excluding TAC ops. When a rule refers to an objective marker, unless directly stated, it is referring to both types of objective markers. So if critical and non-critical, and as I said before, the TAC ops do not interact. So your team TAC ops don't interact with the 2 extra non-critical objective markers is what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's my reading of it too.
Yeah. Which I think is a good way to still not have to design like 12 new TAC ops and have them transfer over, but still introduce more objectives on the map, which is solid. Because like we kind of talked about, I think the game can get a little static at times when you're only fighting over one objective. So kind of putting 3 back out in the center is a far more exciting change, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Chuck is muted, so everything he is saying is not coming through.
I just like to see myself talk. I don't want to hear myself talk. There, critical objectives. There are 3 critical objectives. Placement. One must be wholly within the friendly territory. One must be wholly within enemy territory. And one must be placed on the center line. Critical center objective. This objective should be on the center line. If multiple objectives are on the center line, the one closest to the kill zone, center of the kill zone, is a critical center objective. If a TAC op refers to an objective marker, it's only referring to critical objective markers. So this is kind of the critical objectives are essentially how we're playing now. You've got 3 objectives. You got one on each side of the board. You got one in the center. So nothing too crazy there, right? The addition here is going to be the non-critical objectives. So there are 2 non-critical objectives. Placement. One must be within friendly territory and one must be within enemy territory. Your TAC ops do not interact with non-critical objectives, and players cannot score any TAC ops using non-critical objectives. So this is kind of the first variation that we've seen so far. So what do you guys think about this? I know we've talked about like going back to like 5 or 6 objectives. So this is kind of a way to get us there.
Yeah. So I really like the wording on this. The fact that he specifically states in the op that you can't score on these, that there's no way to do it. So that removes any kind of word lawyering that may come from people trying to like game this or like interpret it in a way. It's very clear. It's very concise about what's happening here. You know, you cannot do your TAC op on these. You know, you got to do it on the critical ops.
Yeah. It's a solid change. I like it. I think it's kind of interesting because I'm curious if that means stuff that like allows you to plant explosives like a Nemesis Claw. Could you do that on a non-critical objective? Which I think is
I think it just says objective for that ability, right?
So you just can't do your – we'll get to some of those a little later, but you just can't do your TAC ops on a non-critical objective. But I think those are still going to work for the crit ops.
Yeah.
No. Squad Ops follows the following game sequence, so it's kind of the basic stuff still. They have a little different with the initiative, but set up the battle. Let's see. Determine one shared crit op. Roll off winner decides who has initiative. One thing I know that, and I'll put links to this in the description as well as links to the video Dakota had describing all of these. He wanted to make the initiative and the things that modify initiative. So the teams get like, say Blades of Cain, they could add +1 to initiative, make it more valuable again, because with the cards that we have now, those have kind of devalued them a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
So select operatives, select your equipment, start with 2 CP, just like now, select attack op from improved ops. And then set up clarifications, set up your largest group of operatives first. Each player set up operatives next. You alternate 1/3 of your kill team rounding up. Player with initiative starts first. Play the battle. During the two determined initiative, during each turning point, players roll off. Players use their kill team rules to roll off. To do so, they must do their initiative. If the roll is a tie, the player didn't have initiative decides. A winner decides who has initiative. In the fourth turning point, there is no roll off. The player who did not have initiative on turning point 3 decides who has initiative in turning point 4. This takes place precedence over all of the rules. So this is a big difference. So if you lose the initiative for turning point 3, you automatically know that you can go first if you want to in turning point 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, that's definitely interesting. I don't know how much that will impact game balance. I mean, like, of course it will, but like, at turning point 4, it's just like, interesting to make it a mandatory choice.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think one thing is with the dice, well, with the card system we have in Improved Ops 2025, there's a chance you could still lose even if you have like the +3 card or something.
Yeah. But, if you roll a +1 or if you roll a 1 and you still have like, I think +2 and +3 and your opponent rolls a 6, you can still lose that if you tied or went first in the previous round or something like that.
So I think one thing about it is you're going to know going into turn 3 who can go first turn 4. I think it will help you make some decisions about how you want to play the game and how you want to activate your operatives. So let's see. End of the battle, simultaneously reveal their primary op. So you still pick a primary op.
One thing I'm curious, if you guys recall, is you gain 2 command points to whoever doesn't go first. Is that a core rule or is that something in approved ops?
So that's a core rule.
Core rule. Okay. So it still applies here.
Yeah. So one thing is the core rules haven't changed. So I think that's still a core rule. So that won't change in that. So,
and if we're wrong, oops.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, got it.
Let's see. End of the battle, you reveal your primary op. The player with the most VP wins. If they're tied, it's a draw. So primary scoring clarifications. So score additional VP equal to half the VP scored from that op rounding up. So a maximum of 3. So you can pick kill, crit, or tack. You can also pick the painting operative if you if you want as well too. But you only get 1 VP for that. So if you really think you're just gonna like suck the whole game, you can just pick the painting one and guarantee yourself a +1 point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, like, I think that's like that's fine. Like, some people may complain about that, but like, if you know you're gonna get blown out, it's it's an unfair match, you're not feeling it, maybe you're really hungover, whatever it is, just throw it into the paint. You should already have your models painted, so why are you complaining?
Yeah, let's talk real quick about paint since you brought that up. So paint. I personally like the paint guidelines. Now I know most tournaments, if you're and there's a couple different ways to look at this. We look at it as casual gameplay. You know, maybe you don't worry about the paint score, but I think at tournaments, like, I think it's fine to score paint, and I think that you know, if you're putting the effort in to paint your team, you should be rewarded for it. It should be an automatic 2 points. And if you just showed up with gray plastic, you know, if you're chasing the meta like Connor does, you lose those 2 points. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I think that it's just, you require people to have paint, and then it's not a matter of, did you paint, you get points. If you're there, you are painted, you know? So that's my preferred way to handle it, rather than integrating it into a scoring system, you know.
I think I agree with Tyler, just because the entirety of that existing Kill Team 1, I don't think I, or Kill Team 21, I don't think I ever not gave my opponent the two, even if they were playing gray, because unless they specifically call themselves like, hey, only give me 0 or 1 because it's gray, it just feels like a weird discussion you got to have, like, hey man, I think those are only worth 1 point because they're like the 3-color minimum type of thing. And I think that's an odd conversation, or something that like should be decided at the start of the tournament by the TO themselves, rather than a thing the players have to worry about. Because I just think it creates this weird interaction that feels kind of, I don't know, it's not a conversation that feels fun to me, I guess is the best way to put it. And then also just like, if I win the game because I painted, and like that, you know, me, I tie all the time. It's like, oh, I win because I have 2 points from paint and you don't. It's like, that doesn't feel like a win. That feels like, I don't know, I get bonus points because I painted, which sure, like, you want to have people have their paint, but it just, I don't know. It feels like that's not something that's needed in sense of affecting the actual game. People interact with this hobby, as we say, in plenty of different ways. And if someone just doesn't like painting, it kind of sucks, but it's no skin off my back, so I don't really mind.
Yeah, at an FLGS, you know, come out with your gray models. At a tournament, have some respect for your opponents and the organizers. The painted models only at Kill Team Cascadia events. So,
yeah. Well, we have had events in the past where people have played with unpainted models. I know there was.
We do. Yeah, there was.
I know there was a Vet Guard player one time that didn't have their team painted, and and I think we let it slide, but they also just, this was last edition when painting was still a thing, and they docked themselves to 2 points themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, if you're playing with a buddy, like, don't, you know, knock them for
not having their don't sweat it.
Yeah.
So unless you're really going to, you know, you can win if you're going to win.
Yeah.
So you can score a maximum of 27 points in this. So currently the max is 21 points. You know, even with the 2 points, take away the 2 points for painting. And one thing Dakota said about painting too, if you watch his video, is that if you don't want to play with the painting rules, don't worry about the painting rules. So yeah, it's optional. Yeah. But still, even without the painting rules, it's 4 more points than you can score in this current edition. So let's find out where they come from. So there's a couple other additional rules. So, during the select operative step, each player reveals their leader operative. That leader must have the leader keyword. If your kill team has no leader, your leader has the operative of the highest wound characteristics, your choice if tied. So leaders are back. Leaders are back on the table, boys. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
It's fine. I think that only affects like 2 teams in the entire game where they didn't have their leader, which is the Death Watch. Wolf Scouts, I guess. Because Wolf Scouts don't have a leader keyword, but they have a required model in the wolf.
Yeah. So he's the leader. Victory points at the end of each turning point, score VP for enemy operatives and incapacitated during this turning point. So here's the big change with the kill op. You score 1 VP for each enemy operative incapacitated, or 2 VP if the enemy operative has a wound stat of 12 or more. Each player can score a maximum of 2 VP from the kill op in each of turning points 1 through 3. So here's a little early aggression can pay off, because if you don't get out there and try and kill someone, you're losing potentially 2 VP. Mm-hmm. So Connor, you like this?
Yes, this is a solid change. I think kill op as it currently is kind of weird. I don't like that you get a bonus point at the end. Just if you're ahead, if you table your opponent, sure. But it's weird, like, oh, I killed one more guy, so that's actually 2 points to me. I really like this just because you can't sit back and rely on late game and then slaughtering your opponent late game. Not that that necessarily happens, but I think this is a much cooler way to do kill op. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that there's not a win more mechanic in it.
I do like that there is, it's spread out that you can score the points turning point one. My concern with it, with the current state of the game, and hopefully the pack overall addresses it, is that right now it plays to play conservative. So if you can deny your opponent 2 points, that's just like not 2 points either of you get, right? So if you can outplay them and outlast them by holding back and deny them that advantage where they may be stronger at killing you, maybe a valid strategy playing with this rule set, you know? Yeah.
I think that comes into the current kill op too, because it's been argued in our Discord, but there's been more than once where I've like done the math on the kill op and figured out that like it's better for me to run and hide on turning point four with someone than it is to try and take another shot at someone, because I'm not going to get higher in the kill op, but they could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. I think it goes both ways with this.
For sure. The other thing too is sitting back in this feels a little bit more punished now that there's five objectives on the board, which means you can't kind of just like, well, my opponent's not going to, I can stall the middle objective and they're going to hold their home, I'll hold my home. So we're not getting an advantage. Now that there's five on the map, I feel like it's a lot easier. Like, cool, if you're going to sit back, I will hold three objectives and automatically have more than you type of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. One chain. So that was turning points one through three. Turning point four, though, in the fourth turning point, you can score a maximum of three VP. So it does have a little bit from kill op. So it does have a little bit of a catch up mechanic. So if you missed a kill in turns one through three, you can get that extra point in turning point four. So, and these are all part of the kill op 2.0 that they've developed. And then another one is assassination. So at the end of the battle, if the enemy leader is incapacitated, you score one VP, and you can't score more than eight VP from kill op in total. So
Headhunter is back. This is the greatest change of all time. Headhunter was great. I'm so glad that killing the leader is a mechanic that you want to go for again.
Yeah. I like it too.
Cool. Let's talk about the crit ops. So a big theme of these crit ops, and one thing that Dakota has talked about a lot, and one thing that he really likes, is the hold one, hold more idea that we've kind of had in the past. So it's kind of a theme throughout like 40K.
Yeah, I think it's used in Big Hammer pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's hold one, hold more is a big theme for them. So the crit ops align a lot with the existing one. So we've got Secure 2.0. It's a mission action. It's just like Secure now. You tap a point and for one AP. Victory points at the end of the turning point. If two objective markers are secured by your kill team, you score one VP. So this is a little different, because it used to be just like if you had one, you scored one, I believe. And then this is the more piece. If objective markers are secured by your kill team, if more objective markers are secured by your kill team than your opponent's kill team, you score one VP. So you score two per turn. And so you've got to tap 2 points. These are the sticky objectives. Yep. And if you're holding more secured ones, not just unsecured ones, not just victory points or not just objectives, you score more. So a little tweak on Secure 2.0. Any big things that pop up with y'all on this one?
I think that's good. I like it. It, like Connor said, with the five objectives, it's going to force you to be a little bit more aggressive in that early game. So like if they pile on early to the center, and you got a fast enough team, you can push onto their objectives on their side of the board, potentially, you know?
Yeah.
And that's going to create more dynamic gameplay overall, I feel like.
That's one thing I very much missed from the old one. Mind you, it was easier when there was still teams that had forward deployment type shenanigans, but I really liked on loot or particularly like if you can rush up with like some way of getting three APL to, full move, dash, and then tap your opponent's side objective, that's super fun. Denying them a point, stealing it for yourself, or in this case secure, if you can 3 APL and get on there after they've already secured it, it's a fun move to make.
100%.
Speaking of loot, let's talk about loot 2.0. so same thing, mission action, one AP to loot an objective you control. At the end of the turning point, if a friendly operative performs a loot action, score one VP. If more operative loot markers or more operative markers are looted by your kill team than your opponents, you score one VP. So same thing. It's a loot more mechanic. So
I think I don't honestly recall on the current 2025 approved ops if loot has a maximum loot points, but it's cool. I'm glad that you can just loot all the time, and it's not necessarily you have to loot two, just more than your opponent for that second point.
I think you're still capped at two each turn because on loot, we should know this.
Yeah. But, well, I mean,
it's normal loot or loot two?
Loot normal.
Loot so. Normal. Yeah. You're still capped at two.
Yeah, because I think that's just all the rule or in 2025 say like you cannot score more than two per turn. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Well, except isn't there one? There's some of them that you can't score in turns the first couple turns.
True. Points, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Transmission 2.0. Tap it to transmit at the end of the turning point. If you are controlling, if you're controlling any that are transmitting, you score one. If you're controlling more than your enemy, more transmitting operatives than the enemy is, you score one more. So,
yep. Good old transmission.
Kind of win more again. Pretty basic. Orbs. We have orbs, not just orb. We have multiple orbs. So this is one that has a pretty solid tweak to it. At the end of the start or at the start of each turning point, the center objective marker gains an orb token. Each objective marker can have more than one orb. Mission action, move orb. If the operative controls an objective marker that has an orb token for one AP, move the token that follows. If the critical center objective marker has one on it, move it to any other objective. If any other objective marker has a orb on it, move it to the center objective. So kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. It's just a new orb seems to spawn every turn, right?
Yeah, there's a new one that pops to the middle each time. So at the end of each turning point, for each objective marker that friendly operatives control that doesn't have an orb, you score one VP to a max of two per turn. So I'm curious if you have multiple... I wonder if there's... Because you can have more than one per
objective
marker.
Yeah.
But if you spend one APL, does that move all of the orbs?
I mean, if they're on the marker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That's something that if he does like an update with, you know, just basic questions and stuff, something that should be addressed in this.
Yeah.
So there you go, Dakota. Glad to help.
So we then go to called shots. So number five here. So this is their take on stake claim. Mm-hmm. So called shots. You have at the start of the gambit step of each strategic phase after the first, starting the player who has initiative, you must select one from one of the claims from the following turning point. So there's four of them. Friendly operatives will incapacitate an enemy leader this turn. Friendly operatives will control an objective marker wholly within an enemy operative's territory. If the total APL of friendly operatives within 3 inches of the center is greater than the enemy operatives, and there will be no enemy operatives wholly within your territory. You can't do the same one more than once per battle. So, and at the end of the turning point, if you control more objective markers than the enemy operatives do, you score one VP. And if your selected claim is true, you score two VP. So I feel like this is melded in a lot of stuff from, like, you've got Assassinate in here.
Yep.
You've got a, like, Control Center.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. It's existed in a couple names, but.
And then what was last edition that the Rec has really liked it, where it was Stay Out of My Territory.
Hold the line. Hold the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do we think about called shots versus, like, stake claim?
I think called shots is cool, you know, because like you're always doing something different,
yeah,
on there, you know, like it's gonna keep the momentum shifting up, and if you've got a really well like a choreographed team, kind of like a game plan, you're one of those people that studies maps and movements and stuff like that, you can probably make this pretty effective.
Yeah, I like that. I can't think of any team that doesn't at least have one good option turn one, because like you know,
you can't do a turn one. So it's after the first.
Oh, well, never mind. I'm glad that in that case there's no. an an option. So you always have at least a choice, and your opponent won't necessarily know what you're doing turn four then. But yeah, all of them seem like they can be used effectively by every team in the game, or at least, you know, two or three of them can, which is solid. So it doesn't feel like it's holding back like hordes that are never going to be able to accomplish something or whatever, or elites.
So the next one is Barrel Blast. So this is an interesting one, and I'm curious what you guys will think about this, because I'm trying to figure out, I've been trying to figure out this one myself. So Barrel Blast. During the setup operative step, place a Promethean Barrel terrain feature within on the center of each objective. Promethean Barrel terrain features should be 40 by millimeter by 25 millimeters tall. Promethean barrels are light terrain. Promethean barrels are considered valid targets for shooting in melee, but cannot be charged. Operatives can move freely within their control range. Barrels do not gain cover. Barrels can be shot within control range of operatives, so your barrel can't hide behind light cover. Promethean barrels have 12 wounds, a 4-up save. Whenever relevant, treat Promethean barrels' footprint as its base. When a Promethean barrel's wounds are reduced to zero, it explodes. Immediately make a shooting attack with the below profile. With Promethean barrels as primary target, remove the barrel from the kill zone after the shooting attack. So Promethean blast, if you do take out the 12 wounds, is 4 attacks hitting on 3s, 2-3 damage, blast 2. So the first time a friendly operative destroys a Promethean barrel in each turning point, you score 2 VP. So there's going to be 5 total on the board. And at the end of each turning point after the first, if a friendly objective, if friendly operatives control more objective markers than the enemy operatives, you score a VP. So I'm trying to figure out why you would ever melee a barrel.
For fun?
Yeah, it's an orky thing to do, Chuck.
Yeah.
I mean, big hammer guy, now he gets an even bigger explosion potentially. Yeah. One thing I just realized a second ago, the Promethean Blast, I'm assuming, is supposed to only hit you if you're within like an inch or two of it, but it doesn't actually have a range requirement. So rules as written.
Well, it's got a 2-inch blast, and it's like the squig where you target yourself.
Right? But
the barrel itself is the target.
Okay, there it is. Never mind. All right. I was like, am I missing it? Or is this technically hit everyone visible to it, which would be kind of fun. So never mind. Ignore that last 20 seconds for me.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of it explodes and hits everyone too. That could be a fun
thing. I guess you could run up there and like try and punch it to death if they're like they had a few guys around them. And to score the crit, you need to be
on it.
You need to control the objective markers. And if you're to control the objective marker, you have to be within the blast range. So,
if you destroy the barrel, does that turn the objective off?
It doesn't say so.
Okay.
You should get extra points for charging it, killing it in melee range.
Yeah.
Surviving like a cool guy action movie with the fight behind you.
For barrel blast, there's not primary ups. It's just to earn those 3 extra points, you have to blow up a barrel in melee range and survive the blast.
And survive, yeah. Or like you should be able to like the squat punchy guy should be able to run up and punch it into someone.
Ooh.
You know? So
I think that would be cool, yeah.
Yeah, can that that'd
no,
be pretty
sweet. It's a terrain piece, I think. Central control. So this is feels like we're going back to classic one here. Start of the ready operative step of the third turning point, remove both non-critical objectives. At the end of each turning point, if friendly objective control more markers than your enemy, you score 1. If you control the center, you score 1. So this is, we had these back in the day, right? Where as the turns went down, you removed objectives, and this is kind of getting back to that. So at the start really of turn 3, it goes down to 3. Yeah. So kind of varies the battlefield a little bit. You're not going to be able to just kind of sit on objectives because they're going to have disappear.
You'll have to go out into the center at least at once at some point in the game, which is solid.
Yeah. Mission 8 is Mission Impossible. Here's your like cool guys don't look at explosions, except it's like blowing shit up. So there's the detonate action. 1 enemy non-critical objective marker the active operative controls is destroyed. Remove that marker from the kill zone. Victory points at the end of each turning point. If friendly operatives control more objective markers than enemy operatives do, you score VP at the end of the battle. If friendly operatives score the enemy's non-critical objective during the battle, you score 4 BP. So this is to get you to go into the enemy's territory and blow up their non-critical objective.
It feels kind of like sabotage which I like. I thought Sabotage was a pretty cool one, and I'm glad it is reborn in a pretty fun way.
Yeah.
Plus, the entire time you have to listen to the Mission Impossible theme while you play this, so get ready for that on like 90 minutes of repeat.
Dakota would name something like Mission Impossible after a movie. Knowing him, you know, that's very on brand
for him. Watch him not get sued by Games Workshop for the formatting of the cards or anything, but then instead it's Paramount that sues him for a copyright infringement with the title of this mission.
There you go.
So sorry, Dakota, I'll contribute to the legal fund if that happens.
Okay, so this one is a doozy. So this is the last one though. So crit op number 9 is destroy enemy emplacements. So additional rules. Essentially, everybody gets extra equipment. You gain 3 additional equipment options. You can take a razor wire, a heavy barricade, 2 light barricades, or 2 ladders for free. Each equipment terrain feature selected in this way must be placed wholly outside each player's deployment zone, wholly within your territory. 2 of these equipment terrain features must be wholly within 4 inches of the center line, and 2 must be within each quadrant, which I assume is going to be like the halves of the board. The selection of the above equipment terrain features count towards 1 each of the restrictions during normal equipment selection. During the 1 of each. So with this, you're not able to take ladders for this and then take 2 more ladders. So that's what it looks like. So mission action. Destroy emplacement. So select an equipment terrain feature within this operative objective control range and remove it. Continued on page 2. This is a crit op that actually has a front and back. So
nice.
Victory points. At the end of each turning point, if friendly operatives control more objective markers, you score VP. And at the end of the game, score 1 VP for each enemy equipment terrain feature removed from the game. So this is trying to get you to go in and blow up stuff that your opponent has set up. So
I like it. This is a really thematic. It feels almost like a narrative mission from the old books, you know, like Octarius and stuff. There's kind of like some old infiltrate tac ops that were about like controlling your opponent's barricades. This is a cool one. It's a little long to read, but I really, really like it.
Yeah. It seems like fun. A good variety, good addition to the game. So
I feel like this is going to make the setup phase of the game like 30 minutes
longer. Oh, it'll definitely add some stuff, because I think it still means everything has to follow the rules of like farther than 2 inches away from everything else.
No coming around bitching at us 10 minutes in saying, Dakota, we should be in the middle of turning point 1 like you did. Yeah. You know you do that, dude.
Do Jaeger mines get placed before equipment or after? Because I think Jaeger mines have to be 2 inches away, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild board if you're trying to place the Jaeger mines and all that stuff.
Jaegers versus scouts with this mission seems like the most hellish pregame setup of all time.
It's 90 minutes to set up and you get partway through turn 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the crit ops. So, I mean, what are we thinking so far? We haven't played any of these. These just kind of were released. But just kind of ideas on what we think of the crit ops so far.
I think they're a great addition. You know, like I said early on, I think that having more ways to play the game and people realizing there's you don't just have to play what's in the book. It's your game. You can do whatever you want. Within reason, you know, and just have fun with it. And it's good. So
I like that. It feels like 3 or 4 of these really encourage you getting on your opponent's side, which is something I very much enjoy. I like when kill teams about turn 1 aggression and getting in your opponent's face and stabbing or shooting them in a friendly manner. And this seems to really encourage that. So that's awesome. I really like a lot of these designs.
Yeah.
So Connor, you're just going to, so far, just, You're just all in for squad ops now.
Yeah, I'm liking them. We'll have to try them sometime soon, probably this Friday maybe. Or I might do the new split map, but I'll see if maybe the split maps can kind of work with this too.
I think that'd be a real weird one, especially since there's 5 objectives.
Yeah, I guess we'll roll off or something and add like the random ones to each. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. So, but wait, there is more. So that's page 11 of... page 16 of 52. So let's keep going. So Dakota does have some new rules in here. So some climbing clarification. Models may not climb down. I know this is a hot point. The climbing rules. I still need to watch his video on climbing and see exactly how it's done. He did add something else. and he described this as something that is to help out with the 5-inch movement people, since it's more vital to get into the middle of the board. So he had a rule called natural sprinters, and this is during turning point one, each operative that starts its activation in its drop zone has a move characteristic of 5 inches, can move actually 6 inches for that activation instead. So dwarves, plague marines, heavy intercessors, they actually get an extra inch of move during the first turning point if they start in their drop zone.
Yeah. Solid. You know, that's a good addition.
I think so. I think it's especially since, you know, the idea of this is to get more early interaction. If you had teams like Plague Marines that are all 5-inch move and you couldn't get anywhere, it's just going to put them at a severe disadvantage for this.
Yeah.
So,
seems like a good adjustment.
Yeah. Additional clarification for Vulcus. Vulcus, treat the vantage of large ruins as 3 inches high for the purpose of climbing. So just clarified some of the, because it's like 3.25 inches or something.
I think
so. So that's a pretty basic one. Beta Decima, there's an additional rule called hazardous jump. And models may jump from the kill zone floor only to jump over sections of hazardous area on the kill zone floor. This rule may not be used to jump over terrain or operatives. So you, instead of having to, like, I guess round the corner, you okay over there?
Yeah. My cat just jumped up and knocked my phone off my desk. So,
God damn it, Chuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So instead of having to, like, run around a corner, it sounds like you can jump over a corner to get yourself a little extra movement.
Yeah, or I think some of the maps have like terrain on the water essentially, but like at ground level maybe. So maybe you can jump from water to terrain if it's on the same level.
Yeah, there's a lot of Beta Decima in the pack. They did a lot with the maps there. So squad ops equipment. So additional rule clarifications. Universal equipment, squad ops works in conjunction with proved ops, so you can use the same stuff before. And then they actually add a couple different things in here, a couple different new pieces of equipment that you can take from various content creators, not your lovely boys of Ox, Cascadia, and Max. So there's an errata where basically if you select an explosive grenade equipment choice, you can't select certain grenades that are coming up. The Xenos are breaching charges, which we'll talk about in a second. So let's talk about the Xenos grenades. So squad ops equipment. When you select this equipment, select 2 Xenos grenades. And there's a couple different ones that looks like you can do spike or plasma. Each selection is a ranged weapon for your operatives, but your kill team can only use a number of times total during the game equal to your selection. If you have the Grenadier cool rule, you add it to this as well too. So like if you normally hit on 3s, with the Grenadier. So there's sticky grenades, plasma grenades. Connor, you're a Halo dude.
Yes.
Like this one.
I think they're neat. I'm confused necessarily what makes them better than just taking normal ones, but I like them.
I think they're just adding a little flair. So
yeah, plasma grenades. It's fun. Don't get me wrong.
So 4 attacks on 4s, 2-4 damage, range 6, blast 2, saturate, delayed blast. So that's the difference between this one and a frag grenade. So when an operative performs a shoot action with this weapon, do not perform the shoot attack sequence. Instead, select one valid target operative and place a delayed blast marker next to that operative. At the end of that operative's next activation, perform a shooting attack with this weapon against the other operative. So then maybe this is more of like a clearing out as the primary target. Let's see. Primary target can be obscured, and you ignore any modifiers of this weapon's hit characteristic due to that operative being injured. After resolving the attack, remove the delayed blast marker. So, let's see. One valid target in place of next to them at the end of the operative's. That operative's next activation. So basically, you can like, you auto stick it to them, and then they try and move, and wherever they move to, you could then. So it's actually a little worse than a frag grenade, maybe, although it's going to keep your guy from like moving into other people because you throw it, it sticks to them. They can then move away from other people, but they have the grenade to them, and then you do the shooting action against them.
The big thing being that if you're in range to throw this, I feel like most of the time they're also in range to charge you back, which like I always look, it's a very Halo thing. You stick someone with a plasma and they're like, cool, I'm coming at you, bro. Like, that's awesome. Yeah. The big thing being also, if you are injured, I guess this is technically better than a frag, but like,
it's true.
It's neat. I like it. I just don't see what you would rather take it for versus just like, this is kind of fun for the sake of memes and maybe getting charged with a guy with a grenade on his head or a glowing blue spider.
You know, I mean, like maybe it's gonna stop you from falling back if you get this thrown on you. If you're afraid of someone kind of running away, you know, that's a good preventative measure on there. And, you know, honestly, it may be a liability depending on who you throw it into. If they're going to charge you and blow you up with it, like Connor's saying, like, you know, throw it into a Rekka, he's just going to come and blow
he's
up.
He's like, anyway. Cool. All right. This is going to chip me. I'll boom.
Extra, we're still going to go boom on you, you know, like you're not avoiding that.
Yeah. Throw it at my squig, please.
Yeah. Oh, no. Not the poor squig.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to see that with a lot of this equipment is that the equipment is not necessarily like the most competitive equipment. It's fun, more
flavor,
it's more fun stuff. And it's got flavor to it. Whereas I think the crit ops and stuff are more to like kind of like a fun piece or like more, I would say more almost competitive, but these are more kind of fun. I don't think there's anything that's like crazy broken in here. So
agreed.
Along with the another Xenos grenade is the spike grenade. So four attacks on four is 4-4-2 damage. Four attacks on four is 2-4 damage. Saturate, rending, and long fuse. So long fuse is when performing shoot action with this weapon, don't choose target as normal. Instead, place one of your spike grenade markers within 6 inches of this operative. Must be visible to this operative. I assume the one that you're throwing it from, or an advantage terrain that's visible in the ready step of the next strategy phase. Roll 1d3. After that number of player operative activations, perform a shooting attack everybody within 2 inches. After all attacks are made, remove the marker. So this is kind of seems like a nice, like a kind of a cool area denial thing.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
So just kind of
this again, one seems a lot more like I can imagine multiple uses for it. I definitely like the concept of like it almost feels like a Molotov where you can use it for area denial. Like, hey, you're not going to be able to guarantee grabbing this point first turn because if I roll low enough, you're going to maybe die for it. So you might want to hold back on that risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As the equipment also, we have what's called the Quartermaster Special. So this one, it lets you kind of mix up your equipment a little bit. So it allows you to select two different things from the list. So one light barricade, one ladder, one smoke or stun, one frag or crack, one plasma grenade or spike grenade. So it's like you choose this and you can choose rather than having to choose like two light barricades or two ladders, you can do a ladder and a light barricade. You can kind of mess it up or mix it up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like this. This is a good mix of everything.
Yeah.
If you like skeletons.
Yeah. So now we have, and I think that one, I can't remember who does that. It's that's from the Mesozoic system. I can't remember who does that. It's one of the people from the Squad Games community. So here's more of the content creator's equipment. So Squad Ops equipment. Can I roll a crit? So we can all guess who this one comes from. So
there's Battle Brothers Ben.
Yep.
Battle Brothers Ben. Yep. Mm-hmm. Use this equipment once per battle when a friendly operative is fighting and shooting during the attack, during its activation, at the end of the roll attack dice step until the end of that sequence. The operative's melee and ranged weapons have a severe. So you're going to get that crit. You maybe can't roll a crit. So,
I mean, if you fail every roll of those four dice and maybe a command point, you're not guaranteed it, but it is pretty nice.
Yeah.
This is what you bring when you're fighting Felgor.
Pretty much, yeah. So then we have from Command Point, we have the equipment Command Points. This is a fun one. This is kind of like the rattling one where I think this is kind of fun for both opponents. So at the end of the select operative steps, roll D3. If the result is 1, you lose a CP. If the result is 2, you gain a CP. If the result is 3, you gain 2 CP and your opponent gains 1 CP. So we're all getting more command points or you just get screwed and lose a command point. Mm-hmm. So again, kind of just a fun, like a lot of this equipment is just kind of fun. So.
Yeah. I always like once I can blow up in your face though. So this is pretty neat.
Yeah. So, Tactical Gamble from Turning Point Tactics. Once per battle, after rolling off to decide initiative, you can use this rule. If you do, roll a d3. If the result is 1, nothing happens. 2, add or subtract 1 to your initiative. 3, add or subtract 3 to your initiative. So this is, you're taking a piece of equipment to potentially
guarantee initiative.
Guarantee initiative, or, and I don't know if I've done enough of this, and I need to think about doing this more, is like using the cards to subtract. If I know I don't need initiative, using the cards to subtract so I don't have initiative, mm-hmm. so I can get the better card and the couple command points or whatever. I guess if you give them initiative, they can just still just get back to you, right?
Yeah.
So, so this is kind of like the cards a little bit, but
especially now that the cards are gone in this mode, it's fun to still have a thing that can try and make sure you get initiative when you need it, type of deal.
Yeah,
yeah. Threes to wound. So as a strategic gambit, once per turning point, this is pretty often. Select one enemy operative visible to a friendly operative. That operative gains one of your casualty tokens to a maximum of 4. Once per turning point, whenever a friendly operative is shooting against, fighting against, or retaliating against an enemy operative, for each of your casualty tokens, it's casual dash TY because, you know, kill team casuals.
I didn't get that. I was really confused. That makes way more sense. I was like,
yeah.
All right.
Well, is that the name of the fan base for them? The casualties?
The casualties. Uh-huh. Maybe.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. If the enemy operative has a token, you can retain one of your threes as a critical success. So this is kind of interesting because it's not like 3, 4, 5, or 6. It's just a 3. You can retain one. And then also the casualty tokens aren't removed when you do this. So you can do it once per turning point continuously against that one operative. So
it's also... I don't know, rules wise, if you're hitting on fours, would the 3 still technically count? I mean, I imagine so.
It looks like it.
But that's pretty fun. I like that you can still be hitting on fours. And you're like, ha, 3. This is great.
Yeah. So that's from threes to wound. Color Coats Crawler Void Mine. So this is GFN Gaming. That's Russ from the, he's Kill Team Casuals too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Color Cult's Void Mine. Just 1 second.
Are you Googling
before the battle? No, I'm telling Jen to turn the fucking heat off.
Well, you are pretty hot, Chuck.
Thank you.
Not as much as Jeremy, who we forgot to mention last episode. Yeah, so sorry, Jeremy.
We didn't get him last episode either.
No, we forgot. Or maybe it was 2 episodes ago. Regardless, at one point we missed it.
It's been brief, you know. Yeah. Jeremy.
It's because Jeremy hasn't gone to patreon.com/FoxCascadiaPodcast and become a Patreon.
I mean, true, but our love for Jeremy.
It's all in the after show, you guys, actually. So he has to subscribe to hear it.
Oh, now. Okay.
Sorry. God, he doesn't want to hear what we say in the after show about him.
Yeah.
That's going to get like restraining orders. Yeah. Uh-huh. Void Mine. Before the battle, you can set up one of your Color Coats Crawler Void Mines. CCVM markers wholly within your territory and more than 2 inches from other markers. Accessible points, accessible terrain. The first time that marker is within an operative's control range, remove that marker and inflict D3+3 to that operative. As a strategic gambit, once per turning point after the first, move the Color Coats Crawler Void Mine using the Void Blink rule below. So this is some scatter dice stuff, gentlemen.
Okay.
Void Blink, rolling 2d6, rerolling a full dice, so same result. Draw a line from the lower result through the higher result. This determines the direction the marker moves. Remove the marker from the kill zone and set it up that many inches from its original location to equal to the higher result rolled in that direction. Mm-hmm. In a kill zone, use close quarters. The distance can be measured over through to wall terrain. Love alternately it. You can roll 1d6 and a scatter dice if you have one of those. So again, fun equipment.
Yeah.
Something that like you could put this down because you start it in your
territory
more than 2 inches from other objective markers, accessible points. So you can put it like right up on the center line, but it could come back to your team.
Yeah,
so
you roll straight back pointing towards you with a 6. You're like, oh shit, that hits 2 of my guys, and now they're hurt.
Bing Bong. So this is from Battle Brothers Ben. He has a lot of flavor text here. I'm not going to read the flavor text, but when you select this equipment, your kill team gains access to the Wing the Bing Bong universal action. Your kill team can use this action twice during battle. 1 AP, Wing the Bing Bong. Roll a d6 separately. Roll 1d6 separately from each other operative that's within control range on a 4+, subtract 1 from the operative's APL stat until the end of the next activation. Inflict damage equal to 1+ the dice result, halved, rounding up. So just gives you like a melee thing that you can do and spin around for
melee for stun grenade with a little bit of damage.
Yeah, so
funny name.
Wing the Bing Bong. Mm-hmm. No, you're a kill team casuals guy, right, Tyler? You've heard Wing the Bing Bong, right?
I haven't been able to watch it really? Recently. Yeah. So
even I've heard that one.
No.
And then Justin of the Kill Team Podcast has the X1 breaching charge. So when you select this equipment, gain 1 breaching charge. The selection is a ranged weapon that your operatives can use, but your kill team can only use this weapon once per battle. If you're a grenadier, you get +1 to it. Mm. Breaching charge, 4 attacks on 4s, 4 or 5 damage. Range 4, seek, heavy reposition, saturate. So seek is back.
Yeah.
If a player selects breaching charge's equipment, they cannot select explosive or Xenos grenades. So this cancels out any other grenades. So fun breaching charge, but it's got seek. So four inch full seek is an interesting one. Mm. And then just another combat blade. So friendly operatives have the melee weapon. 3 attacks on 4s, 3-4 damage. So,
nice. Yeah. I like the breaching charge. That's a pretty fun one.
Yep. And then the next one is licensing agreement. So I'm going to read line by line through the licensing agreement.
Good.
So
we don't have to do that.
Yeah. All squad game maps are licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0. Continuing on through this, there's a whole bunch of maps. So there's a lot of squad games, Galadark stuff. Mm-hmm. There's squad games, Volcus. There's Alpha Batrium and New England Kill Team maps for Beta Decima. So there's a lot of extra stuff in here too. It talks about you can find STLs for light terrain and the breach points as well too. So it's a new way to play the game. Does this, having never played it and just reviewed it twice, Connor, does this fix kill team for you?
It adds some new stuff. I think having turn one scoring would be pretty fun. It's one of the things I've complained about the most, and I like that. That's a solid change.
Yeah, agreed.
Tyler, I know you said you had a lot of the same beef that Connor had.
Mm-hmm. Me and Tyler have been going to the rib store together a lot as of late.
Yeah.
Well, I'm vegetarian, so that's why I don't have beef.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh.
Hey.
Clever.
Also, I'm a complacent player, so I don't mind not doing anything for the first two turns. So
Chuck's like, sweet, I can just sit in this chair a little bit longer.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned it before, but we, the number one Blood Bowl podcast in the Pacific Northwest, were not consulted on this and what equipment to use. So we've created our own.
He hates us.
So he hates us.
It's confirmed.
So I made one. I call it the Cascadia Vox. So
what's that referring to? I don't get it.
I don't know. Okay. Something. I don't know. We figured out. Once per game, you can spend an APL to give another one of your models +1 APL. This does not require visibility and be given to anyone in the kill zone. So
neat.
It's Kasserkin. It's my baby boy is Kasserkin, bringing back the best Vox in the game.
Man, I just finished up the Kasserkin book. Just like
that's what you're saying.
Honestly,
pretty good.
Real good.
I'll just throw it on.
Really good. It shocked me, honestly. Yeah. Like,
who was the author, out of curiosity?
It's someone I've never heard of.
Nice. We've been getting a lot of good new blood Black Library authors.
Let's see. Eduardo Albert. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I've never heard
of it. Very, very surprised by it. There's some interesting, very interesting dialogue in it, and like discussions and good characters. And it is Kill Team 100%. It is Joint Ops, the book. You know, like PvP VE, you know, PV, you know, like
two PvP, teams coming. PvP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever.
Approved ops. We just had Max on. We should remember the name
absolutely.
Of that.
Absolutely. You know, but like it was really good. There was joint ops. There was, you know, A lot of stuff worth reading. I'd rate it like a 4.5 out of 5.
Better than Elemental Council?
I mean, you would like it more. You know, it's, well, it's easier for you.
I like reading the backs of a fucking cereal box better than that.
There's book. Still, you know, there's
kind of Croot. Struck.
There's Croot in it, so Nick will love
what
it.
I'm trying to say.
You know?
No. Sorry.
That's a given, you know, but there is some like nonsense about the greater good, but it's like kind of dumbed down, so you'd probably get it.
Oh, okay, great, thanks.
Sweet. You don't Shrek's not one of them literate folks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of you know, it's like AI is joking about feet, you know, like there's a malicious AI in it that's really funny, so you'll relate.
That's to just
it,
an AI.
I like
that's all AI.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, like it's very, very realistic depiction of AI in
That's not even like an AdMech joke. That's just I had today at my work. There was a big email about like, hey, we're implementing like AI if you want to get in on this. I'm like, I'd rather like kill myself and blow up the server room that hosts this. What are we doing here, guys? Let's not have AI for my job, please.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we created a machine that always lies, and someone's like, cool, put it in charge of everything.
Yeah.
You know? And you're like, oh, sick.
By the way, Tyler, if you need something to read, I can get you back into my Audible for Operation Bounce House, the new Matt Dinneman novel. It's good.
I have a couple things. You know, I may even listen to Morning Glory Milking Farm, so I know what I'm prepared for.
I don't know about listening to that. I don't know. If you do listen to it, don't listen to it with headphones on. Just listen to it in your car with all the windows down.
Windows down.
Staring at the next car over like, hey. At a
stoplight. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, like, if you're going to do it like that. So, you know, in the readings, am I going to be Rourke? Who am I?
No, you're going to be Violet.
Violet, okay.
Yeah, Connor's going to be Rourke.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to be the narrator.
Okay.
I'm going to be Violet's inner monologue, basically.
Okay,
so.
Okay. Yeah.
Go for it.
I was going to say my girlfriend's been telling me all about this other, the next book, and it is crazy. I even got to hear a segment of the book while we were driving down the street, and I'll get to that in the after show. It is not safe to talk about during the main show.
Yeah.
So,
well, we do have another piece of equipment from Vox Cascadia too. So Max came up with a piece of equipment called Off Topic Vox Chatter, and it's even got some flavor text too. At a critical moment in the battle, the Vox lines are confusing, mixed between orders, intel, and unrelated conversation that grinds all logistic discussions to a halt. I wonder where she got that idea from.
Yeah, we've never done that.
I've never. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, as we just talked about, like, you know, Morning Glory Milk and Farm for 5 minutes.
But once per game, when your opponent is using a strategic ploy, you may use this piece of equipment. Your opponent's desired ploy is not activated, and they must shuffle all of their relevant ploy cards from that phase, if they are using any, or roll a d4 to pick a different ploy to activate at random.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that way.
Fun. I mean, I think it's a fun, like, I mean, you know, you thought Absolute Authority sucked or whatever. Like,
yeah, Boxscreen sucked. You know, this one is.
What if this one's a fun version of that, at least. Yeah. So
at least you still get something.
You still get something for it, but it's, you know, you're gonna have the one thing that doesn't affect you, or or you're just gonna, you know, roll it back into the one that was good, or I think it's a fun variation from the people at Vox Cascadia. So thank you, Max, for that contribution. Yeah,
that's a good one. Very fitting.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, any like I said, any last thoughts on Squad Ops so far? I think we should all we'll all get games in with them, and we'll come back and give a little deeper thoughts on it. But
yeah, you know, Dakota, we talked on the phone a little bit before this released, and don't leave me out next time. You know,
yeah, what the fuck, bro?
Yeah, absolutely.
I cried for 3 hours. They had to come for me during the pre-show.
Yeah, I had to really talk him into doing this. So you owe me. You owe me. You know, it was like a really contentious, you know, Chuck was flipping out. He was swearing. He was saying all kinds of stuff. Like, you know.
Yeah, but Connor, that had nothing to do with this. That was just me.
Yeah, Connor just crying. You know.
Sobbing.
I was being forever the diplomat. You know me.
Tyler had to take a big old bong rip just to settle down.
cool, level-headed Tyler. You know, source of all piece at Vox Cascadia and in the Killzone Cascadia Discord. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I was like, whoa, you guys. Dakota's our bro. He's our homie. He created this. He worked so hard along with all these other content creators. We got to cover it. So don't leave me out next time, man. Otherwise, you'd be making me look bad. Yeah. Anyway.
You got more to say, okay. I'm not heated.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to spin this. Chuck gets heated.
We're gonna click this and put it on TikTok. Grr.
God, Chuck.
Very, very, very grr.
That's more like
No, it. I like that he brought back some classic stuff. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a good baseline, and we should do more of that. I think we should continue to and I've talked about this before, like having tournaments where you can pick TAC Ops from 2024 and 2025. Yep. You can use anything from the current edition for your TAC Ops. So if you want to run, I don't even remember the old ones, like
Plant Beacons. Everyone loved that one.
I'm bringing Contain.
That's the one. That's the one that I played all the time.
I'm going to bring missions from 2018 back. You know, it's going to be weird deployment zones where one team's in the center of the board and the other team is in each of the four corners. You know, like
that was actually, speaking of old TAC Ops, for one of Sam and Grant's tournaments, they actually did that where at the very start of the day, you drafted, I think, you grabbed all 12 of the two archetypes you could take, and then you would draw three at the start of each match and had to pick one of those type of deal.
Well, that was the old edition, how it started out.
Yeah.
Before approved ops.
Yeah.
But it was pretty fun. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, bye, cat.
No, I think these are well done. I think the equipment. Sure. I think the crit ops are fun and well thought out. I think the equipment is a little goofy, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
go check them out. Like, they're totally worth looking at. You know, give a few games and then post up in our Discord. Give us some feedback. We'll funnel it up the channels. So.
Yeah. So squad-games.net will have links in the show notes. But yeah, I want to say Patreons. We really appreciate you. Go through the list here. Sam is our top tier Patreon. The creators we're only fans of. So Max is there as well too. We have Zarin in the Zarin tier. We have Cody, Zach, Greg, Rob McLeod. Still got to come on, Rob. Ryan Hagedorn. Got Ryan's tournament's coming up this weekend. Me and Tyler are going to be there.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
James Nevitt, Happy Stick, OG Yogg, the Turn Me On to Morning Glory. Thank you. Tanner and I got a game this weekend. Actually, that was fun. I actually beat Celestines with AOD, so I think I'm rolling AOD.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. I beat him by a point, but I feel like I did some smart stuff. I mean, we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. Troy Wolf, Jenna, my love, Sean, Nick, my other love, Holly, Scott, Keaton, Watermelon, Mark Meyer from Vox Scream, William, Tristan, Riley, and Trench Fever. So thank you everybody for supporting us. Patreon.com/VoxCascadiaPodcast. Tyler, you can do the rest.
At Lowbrow Minis for me on Instagram, at Spanaway for Connor, and at Painting Cave Minis for Chuck. So,
yep. And at Vox Cascadia on Instagram as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep.
So, anyways, we love you. Good night.